podcast, and also co-editor of the book Octavia's Brood, Science Fiction Stories from Social Justice Movements. On Wednesday, Symphony Space in New York will present an all-star celebration of Octavia Butler to mark the 15th anniversary of her death, and that'll be virtually. You can check it out online. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guster, Libby Rainey, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Carla Wills, Tommy Warren, Afrin Ndura. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. Stay safe.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. Time is 6 o'clock. Time, once again, for Off the Wall. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Oh, yeah, that's me. I'm here. You
Welcome.
Are. I'm joining you. How are you?
Good, good. Pretty good. I'm very good, actually. I feel like things are getting done, you know? I like that feeling.
Yeah. I've had a lot of multitasking come back that it was just impossible to do so many things, but I have more room to do things. I think it's early spring cleaning.
No, don't say that. It's not. Spring is. No, you might want spring, but we're not done with winter yet, okay? Yeah, we had a lot of snow. I'm very happy. Very, very pleased. My Yelp review of this winter is the best it's ever been. But it's not over. Okay, it's we still got another week of February, and we have all of March. And there's been snow in April, too. So I want some more storms. This is good. Really got the right spirit here.
That's true. This is the first season, winter season in a while, where, like, snow blindness while you're taking out the trash has been an issue.
Yes. Not knowing which way is up and which way is down. A pure whiteout situation sometimes. And you know, this week is warm.
No, I was talking about the reflection of the sun.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay, the whiteout and the snow blindness is caused by the sun.
All the white is on the ground.
There's so much to learn.
You have blue sky, uh-huh. The sun is blaring down on the white, you can become snow blind.
What if you just
look
up at the sky? Doesn't that solve it?
It's basically like that, but reflecting all of it.
No, but if you look up at the sky, all you see
it's a dot in one area.
You see blue if you look up at the sky. I'm just trying to help people. You won't be snow blind if you're looking up.
Oh, you're saying that's a solution? I thought you were comparing. Never mind.
No.
I'm sorry. I'm really sensitive about
this. It's not a competition.
But yeah, just taking out the trash. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Well, don't take out the trash. That's my solution.
I didn't mean to get on a tangent.
All right. Anyway, the point is, it's in the 40s this week. It's warm. Snow is melting. It's even raining. Okay. You know what? Do your best. Great. That's what winter has been like the last few years, where there's no snow and just warm temperatures and rain. I'm happy with what we've had so far, but I still think there's time for a little more. So, Kyle, while you might be cleaning, let's not say you're spring cleaning. Let's say you're mid-winter cleaning. All right?
Yeah. I mean, it's not so important.
No, we won't have any trouble. If we just...
People, I think, are busy in this moment. There's a lot to be busy about. I hear it's really a lot of work to get a vaccine appointment.
Oh, my God. That's been my day, actually. Yeah, I've gotten kind of good at this, mastering the system. And, you know, people who are into this kind of thing, if you find yourself able to get appointments, help other people. It's really what you should be doing right now, because so many people can't navigate these systems. And, you know, if we spend a lot of time around computers and playing with technology, we notice things, and we have kind of a sixth sense. So if you're able to do that for somebody else. You'll need to get their information, obviously, and get their permission to do it. And there's no harm in making an appointment for somebody if they get a better appointment later on through some other drugstore or medical connection. Fine, you can cancel that appointment that you made, but it's always good to get one out of the way. And every state is different. I'm only familiar with New York at this point. There are people out there, technology-driven people, that can help their neighbors, their relatives, and it really matters. From the beginning of the pandemic, people have been helping in various ways, whether it's distributing the medical equipment that was in short supply at the beginning, to just making sure misinformation doesn't take hold, to this, to the final part, the vaccine. And I'm just happy we're here at the final part. You know, and I'm looking forward to normalcy returning, however that is.
Sure has been a long time coming for so many people, wherever you fall in the social and economic spectrum. There's a lot of attention being paid right now to who is affected the most, mm-hmm. who can help the most, and how to direct all of that help. You have other kinds of disasters going on as well, and skilled people helping in those areas, like food security and so many other issues right now. It's a great time to lend and share whatever expertise, especially with a thing like this vaccine appointment thing, because what I notice about this is it's a production. You find a technique, it's a replicable thing, a production, like a assembly line. Churn mm-hmm. it out for really the most vulnerable you can think of. Make sure people have the help in your community. You're doing that much more to accelerate the process.
And it's very likely you don't qualify yet, because right now only people 65 and over qualify, and people with comorbidities.
Every person you help brings you a little closer to...
Well, that's true.
In a purely selfish way, I don't mean to...
But it's, you know, even if you don't qualify, you can still help others. And there are all kinds of caveats, like, for instance, the drugstore system, does not take the comorbidity people. It only takes a 65 plus. You have to know things like that. We did a whole show about this last week on Off the Hook, and you can hear that show on our website, 2600.com/off the hook. In fact, you can hear all those shows. In fact, you can hear all the shows we've ever done anywhere on that website under the radio section. Go check that out. But yeah, if you have some skills, definitely this is the time to use them. But we're talking about winter. Oh my God! And Texas, what?
That was a disaster. The other disasters I was implying. There's a lot of plumbers and electricians I hear needed. I mean, if you're a plumber in the area, I think they're issuing provisional plumbing licenses for out-of-state plumbers who come to Texas to help.
What? So there's a migration of plumbers down to Texas.
There is a need, a dramatic need, because of all the frigid conditions that led to burst pipes, uh-huh, leaks, and all that sort of thing. They've recently regained water pressure to a lot of those systems, and now, and of course, done their best to close off valves where there are leaks, assess all of that, and then schedule people who really need more complicated jobs done. So there's going to be people without in the meantime while they're trying to line up contractors and people that are skilled enough. And so the state is allowing in people for and granting provisional plumbing licenses, which I thought was an interesting story.
So if you're a plumber, what, just head down to Texas, or do you call somebody first? Or
yeah, I mean, also, you know, electricity, obviously, that's the main event. That's what led to a lot of these other fall-on effects and the overall collapse down there. But there's a lot of people helping on the street, a lot of organizations, and that's crucial.
That's what I want to focus on. Yes, helping is so important. But how did this happen in the first place? Oh, my God, this is an illustration, the most succinct illustration I can think of infrastructure failure, of not planning for the foreseeable. And in this era of climate change, hey, you believe it now? Yeah, the climate is changing in many, many ways. North, south, you name it. And things like this are happening, and you have to be prepared. Texas was not prepared, and Texas didn't have to answer to anybody. They're the only state in the continental U.S. that has not plugged into the national grid. They abhor regulations of all sorts, and the people of Texas are paying the price for that arrogance right now. And it's disgusting to see that. You know, the electric rate that you pay in many circumstances is based on the market. So what happens when electricity is scarce and in demand? The price skyrockets, and all of a sudden you have people paying thousands of dollars a day just to keep their own lights on, and being expected with a straight face to pay that? That's the life that you want to live? That is insane. And, you know, you can say, refuse to pay it. Yeah, great, except that a lot of people have the electric company taking the money right out of their bank account, so it's too late. They've already taken the money from them.
Yeah, that predatory market, privatized market, it's like, I don't want to even compare it, but discount airlines or other kinds of things have been sort of opened up to create competition, or wireless carriers. I don't even know if those are great parallels, but it's crazy that you can have those fluctuations and they get to reap all this benefit while neglecting people wholesale, costing serious lives, let alone damage and on.
Look, it's really simple. If you made a fortune in the last week out of what happened in Texas, you are a bad person. Period. Give that money back. That is not right. I just can't. I'm watching what's going on down there, and it's unbelievable. And then the gall of certain elected officials, particularly the governor, but all kinds of other people on the right-hand side of the spectrum, to blame green energy for this? When green energy, first of all, is a tiny fraction of the sources in Texas, but second of all, it didn't fail nearly as much as the natural gas and as the mainstream energy sources. And if you had simply winterized, like every civilized country in the world does, it wouldn't have happened at all. You know, they have wind turbines in Sweden. They have wind turbines in Norway and Canada and places like that where it gets really cold, and they work just fine. So don't blame green energy. Blame your own stupidity.
Yeah, not only do they have monopolies in those categories of power generation, but they want unlimited profits so that they, in such a way that they don't maintain things to maximize that in every possible way. So they get all of the benefit, and there are a lot of losers in their customer base and the communities they serve under the guise, and this is how it's sold, under the guise and this I think misrepresentation that private industry is nothing but virtues. That was a point that was made in the last week that I think is so crucial.
Right.
That they only talk about how good it is, and whenever you talk about anything the government does, it's always about waste for one thing, but that there's never any positive aspect of what the government can wield in terms of contracting and getting things integrated and on a scale that can really manage the kind of future we face. That includes winterization. And I think a really good point, I heard some interviews with civil engineers and stuff, or civil engineer associations, and the one thing that hit me that I kept thinking is scale. We are not thinking big enough. This is nice to create these little markets that are and have it individualized and regionalized and so small for some safety and resiliency reasons in the way that decentralized systems for voting infrastructure and other realms are good. But this has a much bigger cost if it fails, and that is where you really need some form of regulation. You cannot rid it of it all and expect there are no consequences ever.
Right, of course. The market cannot dictate everything. That's a recipe for a disaster. And those people in government who think government is bad shouldn't be in government, period, because you're the problem. You're the problem because you take away all the power that government has to prevent things like this and leave it up to the market. And then you have catastrophes like this where nobody knows what's going on, and it's costing lives. It's disgusting.
And to just fix these problems, but then build going forward to address the kinds of issues that are potentially we haven't even imagined yet in a lot of ways. I go back to that thing of scale. Like
mm-hmm.
We need massive plans for civil engineering that are really much bigger than the way we're thinking. So that in that example of the grid, it is not okay to not have an emergency connection or something that could sustain a region and not isolate them in such a way that there's no recourse for blackouts and brownouts that can be so costly to human life.
Not only no recourse, but just the callousness. I mean, there was that mayor of, I forget what city it was, who said that we don't owe you anything, that the weak will perish, the strong will survive. What a jerk. Of course, he had to resign after saying that, but the fact that he could think that he could even say something like that, you're a mayor, for God's sake, to say that we don't owe you anything and that you're on your own, what are you for? What do you do? You know, a mayor is supposed to give comfort in times of horror and tragedy and chaos, and this, just the middle finger. Wow.
Honestly, it reminds me of what a year ago when we were talking about pandemic deaths and we were hearing people dismiss and say that, well, the older generations would be happy to perish, you know, to allow
right.
their kids to
yeah.
go to school or allow somebody to work out in their gym or whatever. You know, there was loads of that just a year ago where these
uh-huh.
same representatives, dare I say, from the same side of the aisle were so callously referring to people lives that were lost in this, saying and remarking
no,
that they would
right.
be willing to give themselves up.
The callousness. I do remember
it's
that. Who said that? Who was it who said that?
Packed. I don't know. I could find out, but there was multiple
basically
representatives.
Old people will happily give their lives so that young people can survive, and that means that we shouldn't take any kind of action against the pandemic. A ridiculous twist of logic like that, but closely related to some of the things I've been hearing, you know, Texas representatives saying that Texans would gladly go without power for another week if it meant keeping the federal government out of their hair. Stupidity like that. And then, you know, you have instances like Senator Ted Cruz taking off going to Mexico. I mean, first of all, you know, I'm not a senator, but I do know that that's a bad look. You know, I remember Hurricane Gloria here on Long Island when the head of LILCO, Long Island Lighting Company at the time, decided that was a good time to go on vacation in Italy. Well, obviously, that didn't go over well with the people who didn't have power for 2 weeks, and he resigned shortly afterwards. This kind of thing is stupid. What, you're going to go to Mexico now while all this is going on? And, of course, you know, people like Beto O'Rourke are on the ground helping people. And the idiots of the Republican Party, namely people like Donald Trump Jr., Lee Zeldin, are right away defending, saying that, well, a senator isn't like a governor. You know, he doesn't have to be there for the people. Yeah, he does. He's one of two senators that represent all the people in your state. And he damn well better be there when it all starts falling apart, to show support, to lend a hand, to just be there, not to be in Mexico sunning yourself and escaping from it. I think he learned that lesson, but it doesn't make him a better person at all. So,
Texas, Dan Patrick, I think.
What about Dan
Patrick? Sacrifice the old to save the economy. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick.
What do you mean? It was a
Texan
who said that last year.
Yeah.
Wow.
320 is a March 24th article from the LA Times. Faced backlash for suggesting that fellow seniors should risk their health for the sake of the economy during the COVID-19 pandemic. Let's get back to living, Patrick, a Tea Party Republican, stalwart, and longtime ally of President Trump, blah, blah, blah. Told Tucker Carlson's show, well, gosh, I'm going to puke.
Yeah, yeah, it's disgusting. We are at a grim milestone. 500,000 people died in the last year in this country alone from COVID-19. We are leading the world. Well, Trump promised that we'd be number one, and I'm not sure this is the way to do it. 500,000 people. I don't know if you can grasp what 500,000. If we counted one person per second, it would take us something like 6 days to get through that number. I think even that doesn't really.
Well, you can't say someone's name that fast.
No, you can't. You can't. But if you were, I don't think you can toll a bell that fast either. And
it
people
has to
don't,
be one
people
minute.
Deserve a lot more than a second for their lives.
At least a minute to say the name and, you know, have the moment of silence for each person. So that's a much longer time,
yeah.
Maybe weeks.
Imagine 10 packed Yankee stadiums there, all dead people. And it could have been avoided. Obviously not every death could have been avoided. Obviously not. But so many of them could have been. Just by taking this seriously, just by acknowledging, just by taking action. And you see now how the numbers are going down because, well, the holidays are over. People are observing the social distancing and masking. It makes a difference. Been saying this from the very beginning. And had this been reinforced from the very beginning, you know, it would have been very, very different. Now we have an administration that takes it seriously. You can see the difference. Because certain things are being mandated, certain things are being emphasized, not mocked, not ignored.
Not left to the states.
Yeah. Leaving it to the states doesn't always work, does it? All right. Well, again, help people out however you can. If you're in Texas, help people. If you're a plumber and you have nothing to do, head to Texas. If you know how to get the vaccine, if you know how to manipulate the websites, instead of complaining about how bad the websites are, conquer them. And figure out ways to help people. And every person who is helped is one person less that has to be helped. So we'll get through this. I want to talk about something positive. You know, I want to talk about progress. We started talking about progress. Perseverance. Yeah, I know. I know the kid gets all the credit for naming it Perseverance. I'm just going to ignore that and say, wow, Perseverance is awesome. The Mars rover that landed last Thursday, we were watching it. I didn't know I could hold my breath that long, full 7 minutes. I wasn't able to exhale. It was nail biting. Wondering if it landed, and everything went so well. Everything really went so well. The people at NASA and JPL, they just are incredible scientists that are able to do these amazing things, and that is something to celebrate. And now we have another rover on Mars. We're going to learn so much more. bigger than all the other rovers. We have a helicopter, a little drone that's going to go around and take pictures and test flying in a alien atmosphere. That is amazing. I mean, wasn't that the most incredible thing to see?
Absolutely. Knowing that the rest of its, as they refer to it, the payload suite of instruments and science, all of those cool things that they get to try out, that we'll get to join them on the science and the discovery around those different missions and experiments, that would go forward. It wouldn't be prevented by some technical difficulty, like a difficulty with a parachute or sensor or something that went wrong in
transit.
Anything
could have really messed it up. Anything.
So many different things, and it took a lot of previous attempts and people's work, their real attention to detail, to get to this point with this team and an incredible amount of different departments and moving parts just to get to the landing part where the rest of those exciting things will occur. And now we get to know that will happen. And I think that was the most relieving thing for the people involved mostly, but as a witness to that, I'm sure I'm not the only one that felt the same relief, because we have so many other space assets like telescopes and satellites and things going to visit the sun and other places, mm-hmm. that we know a little bit about, but we want to know more about. This will tell us so much more, and with better cameras, all of this cool stuff. So it's I can't say enough about it.
I really like where we are now, you know, space wise with SpaceX and NASA and all kinds of new projects, and just the enthusiasm.
Well, that's why I mentioned scale, because that works on the ground, but also for aerospace, for exploration, and for science and bioscience,
mm-hmm.
it's also important to really think on a large scale, and how robotics and all of these technologies that we're testing in some areas, like space, and learning about how they work, how they'll impact things that we thought we knew a lot about, but are reinventing them because we know different things going forward that we can apply to it. So that's just a part of making it apply to so many bigger worldly things.
Did you see the video of the rover actually landing on Mars? They've never had that before, but they were able to film it on its descent.
They had, yeah, it was, I think, four cameras on the vehicle itself that drops it. So it's in sort of a capsule that breaks, like, the front heat shield off,
uh-huh.
and then that falls away, and then there's some landing, like a descent vehicle.
Well, it started 7 miles above the surface, and they basically... they show the deployment of the parachute and then the touchdown in the crater, which...
It was amazing.
Pretty amazing, yes.
They used this other system that I think it was called a TR, Terrain Relative Navigation, TRN system.
Mm-hmm.
I might have that acronym wrong, but it calculates, using radar, the types of terrain and the best landing spot without obstructions, and then guides the lander to lower the actual rover itself.
So the footage in that video was captured by several cameras that are part of the rover's entry, descent, and landing suite. Views include a camera looking down from the spacecraft's descent stage, a camera on the rover looking up at the descent stage, and a camera on the top of the aeroshell, a word I've never said before, looking up at that parachute, and a camera on the bottom of the rover looking down at the Martian surface. And apparently a microphone attached to the rover did not collect usable data during the descent. But the commercial off-the-shelf device, why is it a commercial off-the-shelf device, not the best possible audio equipment you could put together? Okay, whatever. I'm just glad they sent the microphone to Mars finally. It survived the highly dynamic descent to the surface and obtained sounds from the Jezero crater on February 20th. Wait a minute. Okay, so they have sound. Did you know about this?
Right. It wasn't a part of the recordings when they were landing.
No, but people were talking about sound last week, and it turned out it was fake. Somebody basically released sound that was from a seismometer or something that was from a previous expedition. It had nothing to do with this journey to Mars. But okay, I'm seeing now that there is some audio from Mars, and I'm going to try to play this. I've never heard this before. Sounds from Mars, this includes rover self noise. So I guess you're going to hear the spacecraft moving around or something, but for the first time ever on Off the Wall, you will hear the sounds from another planet. And since this just came up on my web browser, I'm not sure it's going to work right away. Let's see if it does. I don't hear anything. Oh, okay, because I didn't press the right button. Okay, well, I'm going to let it play through so that I don't start in the middle. My mistake as always. And we're going to press the button and hear sounds from Mars, including rover self noise. Okay. Not quite sure what I heard there. I heard a high-pitched noise and some wind. Okay, there's a version without the rover self noise. That's filtered out. So I guess what we're going to hear now is the true sound of Mars. Well, a little disappointed. I don't know what I was expecting. But wind sounds like wind. And, okay, there's not a whole lot else going on, apparently.
It's a cold wind.
There's no air raid sirens. There's no Martian screaming.
No horns. Traffic.
No music.
No.
Okay, well, you know what? Point the microphone in a different direction. Only the first recording. But that is the first sound from a different planet, which I think is cool.
Well, all they need to do now is send bagpipes up there, robotic bagpipes, and then that'll be in the distance with the wind.
You laugh, but, you know, if you did have something that you know what it sounded like and you played it in the distance or nearby, then you would have a better sense as to what sound on Mars is like. Because right now, there's nothing except for the rover making noise. I don't know what the rover sounds like when it's not on Mars. You know, that might be a good way. I don't know if it's bagpipes or, you know, you can just play a cassette or something and see what that sounds like. But, okay, they got a microphone on the planet, so that's a good first step.
Or jukebox or something, yeah. No, we'll keep up with this story. It's evolving.
It can't be a jukebox because there's all kinds of rights issues and there'll be lawsuits.
Oh, that's true.
You know, interplanetary rights, and the lawyers are ready for this.
Well, they're going to be making their first moves with this vehicle, I believe, soon. And they're right on this ridge of two types of terrain, and there's all sorts of exciting science ahead.
Well, that's what we always like to look forward to. Oh! But not as much as our weekly feature, Films of the Year That Was, where Kyle and I take a journey back ever closer to the present at Academy Award winning films, and we're up to 1992. Can't believe we're up to you know, we've done over 100 years, not of Academy Award films, but just of films in general, because we started in the 1880s.
It's 100 years, wow.
The films have definitely changed. And
yeah.
This is 1992.
This is the year that was 1992.
And we saw the American film. Didn't have time for the foreign film yet. The American Academy Award winning film is called Unforgiven.
Yes, it's Unforgiven.
I never heard of this film before.
Me either. I did not know of it. There were a lot of Western films throughout. It is an incredible genre.
So it's a Western film, you're saying?
Well, I think they get right into it, and this kind of passed right over me in some ways as far as the history and so forth, but they call it an American revisionist Western film.
Yeah, what that means is that the black and white imagery of good versus bad, you know, like the American cowboy versus the savage Indians, that's no longer what it's all about. It's a more complex than that. Who's good? Who's bad? Who's to say?
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's distinct from maybe rewriting how the West actually was settled, which is another way of looking at that. But it is truly murkier.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it starts out in the murkiest of places, a brothel, no less, when a prostitute, Delilah Fitzgerald's face, is slashed with a knife.
Well, yeah, okay. The way they say it is very passive, the way they're saying it. But some jerk slashes her with a knife because he thinks that she's stealing from him, or claims that she's stealing from him. And actually, she giggled at the size of his... Well, it doesn't matter what she giggled at, but the point is, he took great offense, and him and a friend basically tortured her. And... pretty much got away with it because the sheriff of the town came and stopped it. Okay, great, but didn't really do anything except fine them.
That's right.
And say that they had to bring a bunch of horses to her boss, not even to her, but basically the guy that hired her, because the property of his has been damaged and cannot be. That's what it was.
Well, they're in his employ. He's kind of the owner of the establishment or pseudo pimp, I don't know. But that Quick Mike and Davey Bunting are our protagonists who have to pay back the sheriff, Little Bill Daggett, so that her employer, Skinny Dubois,
great names,
really, really fun names here, can atone for the loss of her ability to attract customers.
So her co-workers take great umbrage at this, and they decide they're going to pool their resources together, and I think they got, what, $1,000? Is that what it was? It's only $1,000? Wow.
They sought to basically fundraise and crowdsource this.
They crowdsourced.
Reward.
That's what they did.
The offer was $1,000 reward.
$1,000 reward for anybody who would kill those two, wherever they happen to be, I think somewhere in Wyoming. So, okay, great. So the call goes out, and all these would-be assassins start migrating to the town and to take them up on that offer. And the sheriff, what's his name, Little Bill?
Yes.
He doesn't approve of this plan and winds up basically... Well, first of all, the town has an anti-gun ordinance saying you have to drop off your guns when you enter the town, which I thought was kind of interesting, but he takes great umbrage at the plan and basically beats the crap out of anybody who is planning on going through with that.
Yeah, he tries to kind of warn everyone else as a warning, and that itself makes the kid... Quick Mike.
Introducing characters that you haven't introduced yet.
Yeah, I'm reading.
The kid is one of the people doing
this.
Sorry,
yeah, yeah.
And Clint Eastwood is the other retired killer from the past who's no longer like this and says that about 20 times in the film. That was my past. I'm no longer like that. Had a wife who showed him the way to live better, who died 2 years ago. But he's talked into by this guy, the kid. And then he gets his other friend who he used to do crimes with to join him. What was that guy's name?
Money and Logan. Money is, I believe, Clint Eastwood's character.
Okay, all right. But Richard Harris was the British guy who came to do this and was basically kicked out of town by the sheriff. Clint Eastwood met up with a friend of his. I'm trying to find out what the name of that friend is.
Logan?
Okay, Logan. Who played Logan?
Logan, yeah. That's Gene Hackman?
No, that's the sheriff.
Or Morgan Freeman.
Boy, we didn't prepare for this at all, did we? Morgan Freeman, that's
Morgan
who.
Morgan Freeman,
yes.
I believe, is who you're talking
okay,
about.
Okay, that's
yeah.
who I was looking for, yeah. So he's Clint Eastwood's old friend, and they go together to the town again. And meet up with the sheriff, and they have a run-in with him as well. I don't know. What do you think of the film overall?
Boring.
Yeah, it got great accolades, but honestly, I had problems with it. The Richard Harris character, the British guy that came in first, had the crap beaten at him by the sheriff and had to leave in disgrace. What was the point of that? He didn't even meet up with any of the other characters. They never did anything together. You could have cut that whole part out of the film, and you would have had the same film, except you wouldn't have had this arrogant British guy insulting people and then being kicked out of town and leaving. All right. The other thing I had a problem with, okay, so these people find out about the $1,000 bounty on the heads of these two people.
Yeah.
Okay, so they found out. Why did they have to come to town? You know, that they could have avoided that whole thing where they had to meet up with this hostile sheriff and get beaten up. They could have, since they found out about the bounty, well, why couldn't they just, there obviously was some communication outside of the town. Why did they have to come to town? They could have avoided the town since the killers, or they weren't killers, they were slashers. They weren't in the town, they were somewhere in Wyoming. They could have just done that and collected however they worked it out. So, I don't know. I wasn't impressed with the writing. I wasn't impressed with the overall plot. I was impressed with the sound. The sound and the filming. I was convinced it was actually raining. You know, there's a lot of rain.
Yeah.
So they did a good job.
The Foley effects were good. Quick Mike is killed in an outhouse. That was a good scene. And
Quick Mike was one of the slashers, right?
Right. He was the slasher, I believe. And on it goes. Yeah, it takes place in Big Whiskey, Wyoming.
Big Whiskey.
Quintessential Western, and
the other thing, okay, so Morgan Freeman obviously is African-American, so you have this African-American character in the 1880s, and nobody mentions that. Nobody even refers to that. That's revisionism, because I don't care what people say, there was certainly racism in Wyoming in the 1880s. And to just gloss over that, don't think that's revisionist, for sure, in a different way.
Absolutely. And more of the type I was originally referring to, but yeah, Clint Eastwood plays Will Money, Gene Hackman is the sheriff, and Ned Logan is played by Morgan Freeman, as you said.
Okay, well that was fun, a western. Okay, hopefully that's the last of the westerns. I'm kind of sick of them, to be honest. Although, you know, we had Dances with Wolves was considered a western. I don't consider that to be a western at all.
Drama, more drama.
Yeah, this just seemed to be Clint Eastwood's project.
He directed it. He
produced it. He starred in it. Okay, fine. You know, if you're into that kind of thing, it's fine. But I think there were probably better films in 1992. Well, we'll see the overseas film, the foreign film, and report on that probably next week.
Yes. Yeah, we'll have another installment of the year.
Films of the year, that was.
Films of the year.
I can,
I'm sorry.
Write it on the wall if you want. That's
Films of the year that was.
Yeah, maybe we should just hire an announcer to say it.
Here on Off the Wall.
Well, Off the Wall gets mail. We got a great letter this week. Did you see this letter we got?
I don't know. I might have.
We get mail, but sometimes we get really good mail. This person wrote in. It's not just about Off the Wall. It's about a lot of the radio that we've done. He prefaces the letter by saying English is not his first language. Hoping that predictable errors in grammar don't lead to any misunderstandings or worse. I don't think you have to worry. Heartfelt, sincere thank you, Mr. Goldstein, for your radio shows, all of them, from Radio Free Long Island to Off the Wall, Off the Hook in our current times. He has comments on all of them. We don't have time to get into this. The letter is about five.
I haven't read it.
Five pages long. Well, in the most current Off the Wall, you and Mr. Kyle, mentioned that you plan to upload more material of past shows. Besides the now saved voice messages that we've been airing on the other radio show, that's a whole other story. Having listened to all the other shows, I would highly appreciate anybody not calling this a waste of time. It's not a waste of time, believe me, I'm with you on that. I bring forth the humble request to somehow mark any items added to previously published ones. Well, actually, let me tell you, Michael is the person who wrote this. You have nothing to worry about. We are going to be, when we get all the extra material that we're working on to release, it'll be released as such. It's not just being inserted into the old material and hidden away. We will basically announce what we are releasing. And eventually it'll be integrated into our collection, which you can find at 2600.com. And if you click on the radio button, you'll see everything there. All of the shows that have been done, both on USB and BAI.
Yeah, it's a drop-down with some links.
Yes.
Tons more ability to search through the years and whether it's off the wall or off the hook.
Your archive radio shows accompanied me for quite some time on long walks and ways to and from places that I not always went to willingly. I'd like to know that story. Boy, it sounds like you've got quite a story yourself, so I'd like to hear that. Listening to the very first shows of what would later become Voice of Long Island, we're going back to 1981 there, hearing you and Mike Juhas speculating what the coming years of Ronald Reagan's reign would bring. I literally, yes, physically nearly fell down while walking because of getting weak knees and consequently stumbling. This happened at nighttime with me alone on the street, so I didn't embarrass myself beyond the point of writing this down. Well, that is something.
Powerful medium.
Well, what caused it was the weight of the thought. They have no idea what is ahead of them, coming down like a ton of bricks. And we knew. We had no idea what was coming, what was ahead of us, for sure. But thanks for acknowledging that. You know, I contacted Mike. You have to share this letter with him because it was so extraordinary. And so thank you for that, because I was able to talk to Mike because of this letter, the power listeners have. Some of the more joyful memories are the tapes of calling the embassy in Iran during the hostage crisis, the search for Oscar's all-night kosher deli after being found in Namibia. I'm not sure we really found it in Namibia. The screaming operator of Bhutan, which, if I remember correctly, was actually connected/operated via Nepal. You might be right on that. Trying to establish a connection to Albania. That was a pet peeve of mine because you just couldn't call there at all from the United States. The underwater ringing sound of the Japanese telephone service when called from the USA, as well as the many different ringing sounds of telephones back then. So glad we've archived that, because that might be one of the few audio relics of that bygone era. The horror of finding out that the pizza place had closed and your record side album break would be without food for that night. Yeah, that was a tradition that we had at the Voice of Long Island. We'd always put on an album side and have a pizza, and finding out it was closed meant we had no pizza. Yeah. Musicians at the shows brought to my attention, the Shags, John Lennon's Zappo recordings, Laurie Anderson, Negative Land, the Clash's Sandinista. It just goes on and on and on. Playing the Soviet anthem as intro music for the Ministry of Truth, one of our other shows in the 1980s. Actually, I don't think that is the Soviet anthem. I think that's actually a piece by Rossini called the Thieving Magpie, I believe, part of the Thieving Magpie. But it sounds very Soviet-ish, I'll give you that. The BAI 1,000 Hours of Country Music prank, the travel reports from those of Mr. Kyle to your trips around the world, including on an ocean liner. The sound of satellite phones always sounds like you managed to have the exact same level of having a cold and being slightly drunk in every call on the satellite phone. Or maybe I just was slightly drunk every time I used it. Who knows? Other shows that were brought to my attention as a result, Stardate brought me back to astronomy. Happy to know that Deborah Bird in 2021 still writes and educates about this topic. She was the writer for Stardate, Democracy Now!, Radio Moscow. An honest thank you from the deepest reaches of my crumpled, dented heart to all of you who made the shows what they are. You all really brought so much joy over the years into my life, and words really fail me, as well in English as my native tongue, to describe how much all your contributions cheered me up in dark times and made better days even brighter. Michael, thank you for this letter, because this is why we do radio. This is what it's all about. To know that we reach people, to know that it makes a difference, no matter how many years have gone by, no matter what the subject matter, it counts. It matters somehow, you know, and listeners are the best thing that you can possibly have going. So please, if you're a listener out there and you have something to say to us, we want to hear from you. otw@2600.com, and hopefully we have all kinds of other amazing memories and fun things to bring to future audiences.
That's a great, great letter. I'm so glad he shared all those memories with us. And I feel the same way. The conversation, being a listener in the radio, got me through, and I think for many others, especially in the last year, but so many years prior, keeping in touch with the discussion, the ongoings of the world, in even places you'd never imagine you'd be interested in, knowing that there's so many ways we're alike, but also ways we can learn from our differences. And that comfort in those conversations that take you outside of your routine or whatever kind of difficulties maybe life is throwing at you personally.
Mm-hmm.
It brings you into the wider kind of, I don't know what it is, the ether of what people are thinking and in the greater consciousness outside your own sort of day to day. And that's so cool that you bring back memories just in the letter, but I felt the same way, and that's what brought me to being able to write or speak on the radio and share and then listen to letters like that.
Yeah, the amazing thing is, when we did those early shows, we were just doing them for the local area.
I love brain damage. I used to work.
Yeah, you know, we have people from all around the world now who not only listen but go into those back editions of the shows and are able to hear radio from way back then. And so many things were different. You know, the news obviously was different. The technology was so different. There was no internet. And you just learn so much about people and about how things repeat. And I don't know, it's inspirational. Because I listened to radio from before my time to get inspired by that. So it's all linked together. And radio to me has always been really, really magical, whether it's listening to Bob and Ray or Gene Shepherd or just any of the radio stations I would tune in as a kid. It always was something intimate and special that can never be taken away.
Vol, I remember I was in a student photo lab, and I would play that in the background while people were working on their art.
Uh-huh.
And it would just be like very low under the desk, sort of while I was helping people. And
by Vol, you mean Voice of Long Island?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. Voice of Long
Island, which was a show from 1981 to 1983 that I did with Mike Uhas.
Well, yeah, and you were
released. We released them to the internet many years later.
Wasn't
and
it the exact days that coincided? Or
we
something?
Yeah, we did it every Friday night, however many years later, we'd release it on the same date.
It was beautiful. It hit me.
So it took 3 years to release them.
Right, and it hit me in a certain way, like bringing the past into sort of the mm-hmm. future and in a certain point in my life. And I don't know, those are great, great stories, and they're like little time capsules.
And you can do the same thing. You can download the show and release it whenever you feel like it to yourself and get all kinds of fun memories.
And as you continue to listen through them, it brings you this real juxtaposition. I think that's what hit him too, is the realization of so many things coming back around in a circular way and becoming relevant.
All right. Speaking of relevance, just a couple of quick news items before we go. Poll released today found 61% of registered voters statewide believe Governor Andrew Cuomo did something wrong in handling nursing homes during the COVID-19 pandemic, while 27% said he didn't. I'm with the 61%. I do think he did something wrong. I do. In fact, I think virtually everybody did something wrong during this pandemic, every elected official. The Marist College poll found 42% of voters believe Cuomo has done something unethical but not illegal. 19% felt he has done something illegal. 27% felt he has done nothing wrong. You know, we're talking about two different things here. We're talking about manipulating the numbers and not counting nursing home deaths, which honestly, I don't get what the big deal is. You know, it's not like you're pretending people didn't die. It's if you're counting them in a particular column versus another column for whatever reason. And the reasons that I'm hearing cited are because Trump was insane and was basically going to withhold things if this number reached a certain level, which I completely believe. And I can forgive that if that was the reason, as long as things are sorted out in the future. Now, as far as number of people who died in nursing homes, this is something that I'm really upset about because the number is way too high. There is no question about that. That is something that is simply unacceptable. And, you know, when you are a governor of a state, you have to take responsibility for that. Just to put things in perspective, let's look at some of the runners-up. We had a very high death toll in nursing homes in the state, very high. But let's look at some other states that were very high as well. Per 1,000 residents, Massachusetts, 125 per 1,000 residents died. This is as of September 27th, 2020. And this comes from Statistics site Statista, I believe is how you pronounce it. 125 out of 1,000, Massachusetts, New Jersey, 120, Connecticut, 100, Rhode Island, 86, Louisiana, 85, Mississippi, 74, Georgia, 73, Pennsylvania, 66, South Carolina, 63. These are all high numbers. Even though Massachusetts is way high, this is, you know, Maryland, 62 out of 1,000 nursing home deaths, Texas, 62, Arizona, 59, Alabama, 59, Indiana, 56, District of Columbia, 56, Delaware, 55, Florida, 53, Illinois, 52, California, 51, New York, oh, did you assume New York was at the top of the list? No, New York, 50. Yeah, 20th on the list, and it's not by numbers, it's by percentage. 50 out of 1,000 residents. Still too high, still something Cuomo has to answer for, but there are 19 states ahead of us. Where is the critique for that? The answer is Cuomo's a Democrat, and he's a dangerous Democrat, and the Republicans have their eye on him, and they want to destroy him however possible. This has been going on for a year, all right? Do not trust those people. They didn't take the virus seriously, okay? They didn't want to do anything. They didn't want to wear masks. They didn't want to close down. They didn't want to do social distancing. They are responsible for a large majority of the 500,000 deaths in this country as of today. And that is what we should be focusing on more than anything. Do not listen to them. Listen to the New York State Attorney General, okay, because she will do an honest investigation. But these Republicans are not being honest because they don't criticize Trump at all. And he's responsible for so many of those deaths, as we have proven over and over and over again. Do not listen to Lee Zeldin, because he's right in there with them. He's our local representative. He went to a super spreader event, and he basically towed the Republican Party line of spreading this virus and contributing to those 500,000 people. If you have something to say to him, I suggest going to Zeldin, that's Zeldin, .house.gov/live. And sign up for Thursday's teletown hall. Of course, you'll have to give a phone number and an email address, and they're going to call you. But maybe you'll have a chance to confront him on some of these issues and get an answer out of him for once. That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Does he do answers?
I don't think he does. I think he just does statements. And
that feature didn't get added this year?
And retweets of Trump, and that's pretty much all he does.
Wow. Okay.
It's sad. It's disgusting, but it's where we are.
Yeah.
We're out of time.
Wow, time flies.
Doesn't it fly, though? It really, it's amazing. We really appreciate our listeners, and I hope that you're getting through this safely. Remember, help other people out with the vaccine, and however you can make things better in Texas.
And if you want to listen to other shows, you can just say to your smart device, with your wake word,
mm-hmm.
play the Off the Wall radio show.
That's right. And it'll play the most recent one that you have played. And it'll play all the ones before that, too.
And it will never stop.
Unless you stop it. Unless you stop it. We'll see you next week.
Also, write us at otw@2600.com.
Good night. जम्मू चलेंगे अपने वहां पीर हैं।
listen up. Tera yaar kadi tedi kheer hai, ulamat kar Delhi wale ranje ki tu heer hai. Gin 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 har din ash karenge, zindagi ke sare mazze saath cash karenge. Tu jaan hai, jaan se bhi pyari jaane man, pure saal tera birthday bash karenge.
Birthday bash.